Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. I'm Marcy Young, and I am joined by two gentlemen who are making the world a better place for our mitochondrial community. So Eric and Anil, why don't you both introduce yourself? Eric, do you want to go first?
Sure. Well, thanks, Marcy. All righty. No, we're excited to be part of the broadcast today. We have a long history. I say long as in my first genetic experience was meeting Kyra Mann at the I think it was the MDA conference back in 2018. It was one of my first conferences, and right away she and I clicked. And, you know, CGAT has been involved in genetics for quite some time, but we love the fact that we're able to connect with Kyra and be able to be here today to kind of talk through how we help your community. That said, you know, I've been in the industry since 2018, and I've had a winding road of other experiences, which are nice because they, you know, kind of lend to a good appreciation of a patient journey, as well as, you know, kind of the physician journey as well in this complicated world of genetics and mitochondrial disease. So, Anil?
Yeah, thank you, Eric. So my name is Anil Bhardwaj. I've been working with CGAT now as well for quite a while. Eric and myself, we're both responsible for sales and business development across all of USA and all of Canada, which geographically, these are huge countries. So the both of us are spread fairly thinly, but I think we're doing quite a good job in raising the profile of CGAT throughout both countries. I also actually met Kyra very recently. I had the pleasure of meeting her over a couple of drinks, thanks to a recent visit that we had over to the USA. So yeah, I mean, I really liked what Kyra's doing and the MITO Foundation, you know, the fact that how you are supporting your patients through various fundraisers, through activities, and helping them to engage with companies like us, because I think that's really important. I think a lot of times people don't really understand what we do day to day. And they think that we're just kind of going around door to door, just trying to sell to people, but we're not. We're actually very actively wanting to engage with patients so that we can help to improve their lives.
I like what you said. I think that that's really the point of this podcast as well. So I'm glad that we're able to connect together. I think when I think of Energy in Action, I think of companies like yours and companies that do other things, all in the name of making life a little bit easier for those with mitochondrial disease, and also including patient journeys so that we can kind of see how other people are going through what might feel somewhat similar to our own story. So feeling isolated is a big, scary feeling within this whole process. So I'm really excited to bring forward the information and the services that you all provide and how you can make our lives in the mitochondrial community better. So let's get to that. So tell us about CGAT.
Gosh, I'll kick it off. You know, CGAT's an amazing organization led by our founders, Saskia and Dirk Biskup. They started the organization back in 2009. And Saskia is this amazing scientist. And they're kind of a powerhouse team in Germany. And Saskia was part of the team that discovered the LRRK2 Parkinson's gene. And she has always been very innovative and approaching things from the patient's point of view. But out of that, we were one of the first organizations to start next generation sequencing back in the day. And we really have kind of led the charge, you know, mostly on the other side of the pond. But, you know, the reality is the effect has been worldwide. And the organization, we started off back, you know, with really about three people, and we've grown to a family of organizations that work together where we have close to over 500 people today. And I think that one of the important factors in the world of genetics today is the stability that we bring to the market. Especially here in the U.S., there's a lot of organizations that do genetic testing. However, there's also a lot of turmoil, companies going in and out of business organizations that are trying to enter the marketplace. But the reality is we've got a long-standing understanding of the genetic space and then that patient involvement. So we really look at the science behind supporting patients and physicians and then provide the type of testing that we would want for our own families to be involved in. And as a family organization and a family lab, we're not threatened by, you know, some of the issues that a public company might be with shareholder information and such. You know, we're really focused on the science and the patients.
So can you tell us a little bit about what next generation sequencing means?
Yeah, sure. So next generation sequencing. So in terms of being able to analyze DNA, so the whole process of being able to analyze DNA, it's actually kind of gone through several kind of shifts in magnitude of actually being able to see the DNA. So from the kind of going back to kind of the previous century, whereby we were able to find the structure of DNA and analyze the structure of DNA, then the sequencing of DNA, which basically took a very, very long time, took a lot of resource, took a lot of machinery. So, and then it's kind of, so basically what next generation sequencing is, it's kind of massive parallel sequencing of the DNA. So essentially what you're doing is you're taking various stretches of DNA and you're actually amplifying them up, and you're amplifying them up so that you can analyze them. From that analysis, you can make a diagnosis. So not everyone will want to go from amplifying the DNA to diagnosis. Some will want to go from amplifying the DNA into research, and they will want to be able to look at the DNA and do research papers, look at it scientifically as to which stretches of DNA might cause a disease. Now, someone who's working in diagnosis will look at those same stretches of DNA and say, right, okay, these stretches of DNA are what are responsible for causing disease X, disease Y, disease Z, or Z. Through next generation sequencing, which is abbreviated to NGS, basically what it means is that you can massively parallel amplify stretches of DNA, whether that be a small region of DNA, whether that be a larger region of DNA, whether that be, so that the largest region of DNA would be, for example, the genome. A smaller stretch of the DNA would be the exome. Now, the difference between the exome and the genome, so it's basically is that the DNA in itself, it's only really powerful when it gets through a process called transcription, it becomes protein, because it's not necessarily the DNA that causes the disease, it's the changes in the DNA that lead to a change in the protein, whether that be the level of protein or whether that be the actual functional properties of the protein. That's what causes the disease, because it's really the protein within the cell that carries out the function. Now, if that protein in the cell is not able to carry out that function, then it essentially leads to a disease. So that's where we want to be able to get to, is to be able to look at the DNA and see, okay, this part of the DNA, because it has a particular error in this DNA, this is what's likely causing the disease through a protein which is not able to perform its function, which is required from that particular protein. So the genome is basically every part of the DNA. Now, an exome is only that part of the DNA which actually gets transcribed from DNA into protein. And so that's called exome. So these are kind of two important differences that I think might be quite crucial, especially kind of later on in the podcast, as we talk about some of the differences between, for example, Seagat and other suppliers that we have in the market.
So if I were to, let's say, go to my doctor with, you know, my list of symptoms and they start testing at a hospital level, do you think they're doing testing to diagnose me in this way? Or is this different than what I would get right now if I went to the Cleveland Clinic?
Yes, they are doing the testing, but I think it's important to know all around the country, we see different levels of understanding of genetics and the involvement in your care plan and your care team. If you're going to your local physician, you know, that's in your town, they may have read about genetics, they may have studied it in school, but a lot of times they're looking at it from a traditional standpoint. They're not getting to that genetic level. We've now reached a point, though, there's a larger understanding of the importance of genetics in a treatment plan, but the access to that treatment is spotty throughout the country. Some of the rural areas, their clinics may not have it, and they might have to travel to a larger city to be able to get that testing. But all in all, their testing around the country is available and at different levels. And we're trying to help with that understanding that everyone should really know their genetic makeup. And if you're, especially if you're suffering from things that don't feel right, you want to go to your physician, say something isn't right. They'll do their traditional testing, but sometimes you have to get to that genetic level to really understand. And certain disease states are more advanced, like cancers. We work a lot in the rare disease space where there's just this unknown odyssey. And I think what we're trying to educate people with and insurance companies that it's an important part of the process to identify early if there is a variant that could be causative, because that could cut down on the diagnostic journey and your health plan. You can save a lot of money in treatments that might not be necessary if you get that earlier diagnosis, because it helps you kind of guide yourself in that journey long term.
And be healthier from an earlier start.
Yeah, especially if you have family members presenting. A lot of times, you know, you want to understand what's kind of potential for your family, but also, you know, what are those treatment plans to, if there's a drug that can help you, you want to identify that. If there's a slow, being able to slow progression. I know like diseases like ALS, where Alzheimer's, we're understanding more and more, but there's not a cure, but there are ways to help slow progression. And these are all parts, like the mitochondrial world, you want to just introduce an understanding earlier so your care team can then help you in your journey and a little bit earlier in the process.
Would there be benefit for mitochondrial patients that already have their diagnosis to get this? It seems like a more detailed analysis. Like for me, I have a diagnosis. I've done genetic testing, but could I do more? Could I understand more? Is there more room to learn?
There is definitely room to learn. I would say in terms so having further testing, if you have your diagnosis, now it would probably be best that you speak to the physician and you find out what kind of medications, what therapies are available for that particular diagnosis. I would say then to go further. So if you know, for example, the causative mutation, so you know that a particular variant that you have, a particular genetic mutation that you have is the cause for your pathology, for your particular disease, I don't necessarily think kind of doing further DNA testing would actually help with that, to be honest, because I think you would be basically testing the same thing. So rather than doing that, I would say it's best to really to speak, kind of keep updated with your physician, keep updated with the community with regards to therapies, benefits, but also touching upon what kind of Eric mentioned earlier as well, which is about the whole personalized medicines. It's important early on to have the correct diagnosis so that you can actually make sure. So, you know, we are now in the era of personalized medicine, whereby the variant that you have, the causative mutation that you have, would actually govern which particular therapy that you might get. So you want to make sure that you're getting the right therapy at the right time, as early as possible, even, you know, because that will really help with your future prognosis.
And to add to that, if you have had genetic testing, make sure that the lab that has done your genetic testing is doing reanalysis, because we're in a world of discovery as well. And if something new came on the market, if there was a new marker that was also known to be causative, and that was something that was identified that might have been a variant of unknown significance in your report, if it's now attributed because of research to be causative, you want to know that, because that'll help. So, I would always make sure that the lab you're using or have used does a reanalysis for you, and they should do it on a regular basis.
That's really interesting. Okay. So, I mean, I see a lot of people I'm on so many, you know, Facebook support groups related to the mitochondrial community with different advocacy organizations. I'm in a group called CPEO, you know, there's a few of them, and thank God for them, to be honest. But there are people in the groups that say they can't get a true diagnosis. And I don't know a ton of details about what their journey has been, but maybe they'd be great candidates. I mean, I don't know what their healthcare is like. I don't know what city they're in. So could they contact you directly, or do you have to work with the physician?
They can contact us directly. And so, you know, meaning kind of like Eric, myself, they're kind of, they by all means would be happy to work. Well, happy to hear directly from the patients that we can then direct them through the correct system in order to be able to kind of access the testing. So globally, if you're requesting diagnostic testing, a request has to be made by a physician. So the physician has to request a diagnostic testing or any kind of diagnostic test. But saying that, you know, we are more than happy to work with the patients and their physicians and direct them. If they are not able to access a physician for any particular reason, by all means, we'd be happy to put them in touch with our own in-house physicians.
Oh, wow. You have in-house physicians.
Correct. Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Will they meet with patients virtually, or are they only at certain centers, or?
We do meet virtually. They can meet the patients virtually, give a virtual consultation to work with the patient to be able to then access the test. So you mentioned previously whereby certain patients just haven't been able to get a diagnosis. It really depends upon kind of when they've been looking for that diagnosis that, you know, they may have gone too focused. They might say, right, okay, the symptoms that I'm presenting with is, you know, this particular disease. And when they've then gone to test the genes which are related to that particular disease, it may have been too focused. So what they might want to do is to kind of broaden that kind of coverage, that area in which they're testing, to broaden it out to look at further genes. So the widest kind of, I guess, the widest net you can throw would be the genome, would be to do like to do the whole genome test. A more focused way would be to do what's called a focus panel, whereby you might be doing very, very few select genes or maybe kind of broader genes. But so there's advantages to going focused and advantages to going broader. So that really does depend upon the symptoms that the patient is presenting with and also their journey. So if they've already done a very, very focused test, it doesn't then necessarily make sense to go with another focus test. Look at all of the clinical symptoms together. They can't just look at one or two symptoms alone. They have to look at all of the symptoms together, bring them all together, and then to make sure that they're looking, they are throwing that kind of blanket on the clinical symptoms to make sure that they're kind of encapsulating all of them and all of the genes involved in those particular clinical symptoms.
And I'd like to add, you know, what's important to know is we will work directly with the patient and their physician. That's probably the best model, because what we can do is we can have those conversations with the physician they're comfortable with. And if that physician isn't well educated or doesn't have access to genetic counselors, we can help with that access. We really want to, you know, grow this network here in the U.S. where we are facilitating testing with their current physician and care team. Because it really is an easy process, and we want to make it easy so that they don't have to try to go on and, you know, talk to our team in Germany at a weird hour. You know, that's why we're here and we're helping that. But the support is there. But the important thing is we can also help them access at their point of care. I don't care if their physician is out in the sticks of Missouri or if they're, you know, right in downtown Chicago, like, you know, like I am here. So we are here to provide that access to the patients and physicians wherever they are.
So what does the testing look like? How do you test?
It's a simple process where we have a collection kit that we make available, and we have a couple mechanisms. We want a sample of DNA, and DNA can consist of a couple things. You know, on TV and in the movies, you know, you get a hair sample and you can find the criminal. But, you know, that is possible. But really, in the world of diagnostics, what we want to be able to do, the gold standard is we get a blood draw and we analyze the blood. It's enough material to be able to test and find the information we need. In the world of COVID really opened up our understanding with the saliva, or they call them buccal kits. Saliva is a good mechanism when people can't get to a lab to do a blood draw. It's easy. In some cases, we, you can find a degeneration of that saliva or DNA in transport. So what we want to do is stick with a gold standard. We love blood, but we can work in a lot of cases with saliva. Now, that said, the mitochondrial world, as we know, it's really an interesting kind of topic because it can exist in different materials throughout the body. For example, you may need to do a muscle sample, and we may need to check, you know, different DNA samples depending on what the patient is, what they're, you know, presenting. So we can accommodate different types of samples, you know, and work with their physician and care team. And if they've already done biopsies and such, you know, we can work with that. But primarily, it's a simple blood draw. They submit the sample in a collection kit, and it gets, you know, we send it off to be analyzed. And within 3 to 4 weeks, typically, we would have a report that would be generated and given to the physician. And hopefully, a genetic counselor can be present to help support and present the findings, because it's a lot of times the genetic counselors are rock stars in this world.
So when you think about your testing and CGAT versus some of the other testing companies, what are the big differentiators?
I mentioned previously about the differences in types of tests that are actually available. So we have, for example, the small focused tests, and we have the wider tests. So I think at the moment there is an assumption that kind of throwing the net as far as you possibly can to cover the whole genome, that would be the best possible test. But what we found at CGAT is that that's actually not the best possible test, because when you're throwing the net too wide, you tend not to go very, very deep. So whereas what we do at CGAT is we throw the net wide in the fact that we cover the exome. So we cover everything that gets basically kind of goes from the DNA into protein. But sometimes there can be certain genetic mutations that sit outside of these regions, which go from DNA to protein. So they sit in other parts of the genome, and they still cause disease through various different mechanisms. So what we do is we say, right, okay, we're not going to cover the whole genome, because it doesn't go deep enough. What we want to do is to be able to go sufficiently wide, but also to make sure that we go deep enough that we can detect all of the mutations which are most likely to give a disease, which sit in the exome. And so that's a kind of 80 or kind of, I think more than kind of 80% of the mutations sit within the exome itself. But then the other kind of instances whereby the mutations might actually sit outside of the exome in the non-exonic region, we also include those particular parts specifically into our analysis. So we make sure we're including them so we don't miss. So that, for example, those people who may have thought that they represent or that they have a particular disease, but perhaps it could be a mutation which is sitting outside of the gene that would normally be responsible, but it's actually still impacting that gene, but it's not detectable by kind of the normal procedures. But the fact that we are kind of actually including those parts of the genome which still impact the other parts of the genes, it means that we're actually still including this with our analysis, and thereby we're actually able to kind of pick up on such patients as well.
One of our main products, it's called the Exome Extra. And this product has taken, you know, what a traditional exome looks like. It added those elements that Anil was just alluding to. So we're looking at that. It's like a clinical genome, we like to say, because we're including all of the known variants that are causative, but we're also looking at things for your community like the mitochondrial DNA. We're including that within our analysis, so we're not going to miss those, because in a lot of organizations, that's a separate test. And, you know, what we're trying to do, and just to put a little plug in, Thursday the 20th, we have a webinar that's available to the community that they can listen to and understand a little bit more about our Exome Extra and the importance of that testing. And we actually are going to do a case study on mitochondrial disease. So it might be nice for them to tune in. And I think they've received notice in your weekly or your monthly newsletter. I think Kira just sent out the June edition, and we're in that if you scroll down quite a bit, but we're in the newsletter. So I think there's a sign up there if someone's interested. If you if you're interested as a patient, or if you want to pass it on to your physician, if they want to tune in, it might be worthwhile. We're going to talk about other areas, but mitochondria is one of our focuses in there. But anyway, I think the differentiator is we develop our own assays, and an assay helps guide what type of testing we do. We don't use off-the-shelf type testing. We develop it own in-house based on what we feel the science should be. And we're a large contributor to ClinVar, one of the top five. ClinVar is a, for those that don't know, is an online portal for physicians and researchers to be able to look for information that we find in our testing. We share it with the world because we feel that what is important is we are stronger globally if we share information for patients, especially in the rare disease areas, especially in mitochondrial disease. There are findings all the time. And if we can share that information and we can find one patient or one researcher that says, oh my gosh, that's the answer we were looking for, we feel good about that.
That will ultimately benefit all of us. So I appreciate hearing you say that. So I did see some information on your website about family planning. And I'm curious how you live in that world, how you help patients, how you're involved there. I don't know a better way to say it, but I'm curious how you help patients in terms of family planning. How deep does it get?
So the family planning panel, what it is basically, it's a panel which analyzes all recessive mutations which are held by the couple, and so that they can look at the risk of being able to pass on genetic mutations to their offspring. I mean, in a nutshell, that's exactly what it is. But the purpose of it is to be able to look at the risks and the risks, the probability of being able to pass on a particular genetic disease to the next generation. And that's how we've been working with that panel now, I think for now kind of coming up to a couple of years, actually. It's a popular panel. It's a very popular panel because of, you know, the role of genetics that genetics is now taking within kind of future-proofing, you know, not just your children, but also, as we mentioned earlier as well, in terms of precision medicine, choosing the right therapies. So I guess a panel like this is a panel that really makes sense in making sure that you're minimizing any risk to pass on a disease. Also to understand your own profile, your own genetic profile, to be able to understand all different types of diseases that perhaps you might not necessarily suffer yourself because perhaps you are just a carrier and you're not necessarily affected, but you want to understand that, you know, that perhaps other members of your family have actually had or do have a disease. So am I at risk of then passing on this same disease to my children?
This is an important area for a genetic counselor to be involved because, again, when we talk about, you know, tough conversations, this is right at the forefront because there are decisions to be made, and especially in the world of family planning. But additionally, you may already, you know, you might be further in, you've already have children, you want to plan, you know, you want to plan out, do you want to identify markers that are going to show themselves later in life? And you get into some real difficult conversations. You know, we know with young women and men, the BRCA gene, we hear a lot about that in breast cancer. You know, that's something that might not develop until later in life. And as a parent, you know, we have this access to genetic information. Do we even want to know that? And a lot of times I don't think we do early on because those are decisions that may or may not present later in life. And you really need to ethically have someone to guide you through that journey and that decision-making, because we can identify that information at birth in some cases, but then is that the appropriate time to understand and know that? And I think that these are all questions that you really want to work with your physician and your genetic team, genetic counselor, to understand before even diving into, you know, getting all this information. Information's good, but it can also lead to other stresses that maybe are unnecessary.
Not understanding it in the right way.
Yeah,
But it sounds like your team is really there to help give the guidance in the best way possible. Just hearing the two of you talk about your company, it feels like you really know a lot about the background of the testing and of how it all works scientifically, but that you really also recognize that there's feelings and love and fear that live within all of this. You've definitely threaded that through every answer you've given. So I feel really good about having our community contact you because you will hold their hand through the process.
Absolutely.
So when it comes to the family panel, just one last question. Is that something that an individual could contact you about testing without a physician and work with you directly and your genetic counselors, or do you have to have a physician on your side as well to order it?
Yeah, I think it's still very important for them to work through their physician. I mean, we know that genetic testing, we're not an organization that sells direct testing to consumer. You know, we really do work through that model because we believe, and it's a kind of that community approach to it. You want that support. It's not just about the information. Could we run a test and give them the report? Sure. That's not, you know, we don't feel that's ethical. We want them to be supported and understood. But obviously, there's always an exception to something, and we can, you know, take a look at that. But the reality is we want to work with their team. And like we said early on, if we need to engage our team to help support that, we can do it.
So if I wanted testing of any kind, I could contact you, and would you contact my physician and kind of get the sign offs?
Absolutely. It's a consent to help you. And, you know, so we want to work with your physicians to get your consent to do anything. And, you know, we hold that information vital. You know, so again, it, you know, we follow all HIPAA laws, and we're a CAP/CLIA laboratory, and those are accreditations that are known here, you know, in the U.S. and it's important. So, you know, we try to follow those guidelines and work with your care teams, again, like I said, to support your journey.
Well, thank you for telling us all your story and how you can be helpful to our community. I think it's fabulous to be able to arm our community with more information and more tools to make life a little bit easier. So thank you both for being on our podcast, and we will have you on for the webinar, and we'll be able to include information about that in our show notes. So listening to this podcast, you can be directed to that as well. So thank you both, and good luck to you. And I look forward to connecting with you more.
Thank you, Marcy.
Yeah, lovely to meet you, Marcy.
Take care.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I'm so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.